भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 9, Detachment from All That Is Material, Text 13. Tadaivam atmanyavarudhachito Navedakinchid bahirantaramba Yate shukaro nirpatim vrjantam Dishau gatatma nadarsha parshve Tadaiva atmanya varudham chito Naveda kinchid bahir antaramba Yate shukaro nirpatim vrjantam Ishao gatatma nadarsha parshve Tadaiva atmanya varudha chito Naveda kinchid bahirantaramba Yate shukaro nirpatim vrjantam Ishao gatatma nadarsha parshve Vaishnavis. Ta-da! At that time. Evam, thus. Atmani, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Avaruta, fixed. Chitta, the mind. Na, does not. Veda, no. Kinchit, anything. Bahi, outside. Antaram, inside. Va, either. Yata, just as. Dishu, of arrows. Kara, a maker. Niripatim, the king. Brajantam, going. Isho, in the arrow. Gata Atma, being absorbed. Nadarsha, did not see. Harshve, right next to him. Translation purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Thus, when one's consciousness is completely fixed on the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one no longer sees duality or internal or external reality. The example is given of the arrow maker, who was so absorbed in making a straight arrow that he did not even see or notice the king himself, who was passing right next to him. Report. It is understood that when a king moves on a public street, he is heralded by kettle drums and other musical instruments, and is accompanied by soldiers and other members of his retinue. Thus, despite this royal extravaganza passing right by his workshop, the arrow maker did not even notice, because he was completely absorbed in his prescribed duty of making an arrow straight and sharp. One who is completely absorbed in loving devotional service to the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, no longer pays attention to a material illusion. In this verse, the word bahis, external, refers to the innumerable objects of material sense gratification, such as food, drink, sex, and so on, which drag the senses of the conditioned soul into material duality. The word antaram, or internal, refers to memory of previous sense gratification or hopes and dreams for future materialistic situations. One who has seen everywhere the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, categorically rejects both internal and external illusion. This is called mukti pada, or the status of liberation. On this platform, there is neither attraction nor aversion to sense objects. Rather, there is loving absorption in the absolute truth, Krishna, and an overwhelming desire to please him by devotional service. One who gives up the reality of Krishna will be forced to wander uselessly in the kingdom of mental speculation. One who cannot see that the absolute truth, Lord Krishna, is the background and basis of everything that exists, will be bewildered by the false concept that there is something that is not Krishna. Everything emanates from the Lord, and he is the Lord of everything. The simple understanding is the actual existential situation. Om Jnana Timrandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshu Nitamina Tasmai Shri Gadenama Vanchakopa Trubhischa Kripa Sindhu Vyabhacha Patitano Pavani Vyo Vaishnava Namo Namaha. Jai Krishna. After a lecture in New Vrindavan, September 1st, 1972, which happened to be Janmashtami, there was a question by a guest, and he asked it a little bit more complex, but a devotee paraphrased the question, and asked Srila Prabhupada, why is Maya so strong if our purpose is to be with God? And the answer Prabhupada gave, he said, because your purpose is not strong. So here we see the arrow maker who has very strong purpose. There are three verses actually about the arrow maker guru. Lessons in the arrow maker are given in the previous two verses talking about the yogi whose mind is completely controlled and fixed, and the actual analogy or the example of the arrow maker is now given in this third verse. So what is the lesson from the arrow maker? The arrow maker did not even acknowledge or see or even perceive the presence of the king. The king comes through, you can see, as they're saying, with the drums and the armies and the big procession, and the arrow maker is so absorbed in making his arrow correctly that he doesn't even notice that the king is there. So similarly, one who is absorbed in Krishna consciousness barely pays attention to the material energy. So it's interesting that it's not so much that the advanced devotee is struggling with Maya or the material energy, but almost as though the material energy is just kind of back there and not really very much noticed. Why? Because the devotee is so much absorbed in his service, his remembrance of Krishna, his hearing and chanting, and understanding Krishna as being everywhere. So if the devotee sees Krishna in everything, as stated here, and that everything emanates from him, therefore the devotee is not bewildered by Maya because he almost doesn't see Maya. The devotee sees Krishna everywhere. Sees Krishna acting through either his material energy or his spiritual energy. So if everything is coming from Krishna, everything is his energy, and our purpose as devotees is to use everything, all of Krishna's energies in his service, in that way the devotee is just totally fixed in absorption of Krishna in the same way that this arrow maker was so dedicated to his craft of making the arrow straight and true. Now, when I was thinking about this absorption and strong purpose, reminded me, of course, of a very famous verse of Bhagavad Gita, the Vyasayatmika Buddhir verse about resolute purpose. That's Bhagavad Gita 2:41. Vyasayatmika Buddhir Ekehe Purunandana Bahushaka Yahantascha Buddhayo Vyasayinam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose, and their aim is one. Interesting, the aim there, just think of the arrow. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. I thought this spoke almost directly to the verse in purport that we're reading here. So I wanted to read, not all, but part of Srila Prabhupada's purport to 241. Prabhupada says, a strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. And then Prabhupada gives what I've always thought was the best definition of faith ever written. Prabhupada says, faith means unflinching trust in something sublime. You all remember that one, right? Unflinching trust in something sublime. Sublime, something beyond the ordinary, beyond the mundane. When one is engaged in the duties of Krishna consciousness, he need not act in relationship to the material world with obligation to family, traditions, humanity, or nationality. Fruit of activities are the engagements of one's reaction from past good or bad deeds. When one is awake in Krishna consciousness, he need no longer endeavor for good results in his activities. Go on a little bit. The resolute purpose of a person in Krishna consciousness is based on knowledge. Vasudeva Savramiti Samahatma Sadurlava. A person in Krishna consciousness is the rare good soul who knows perfectly that Vasudeva Krishna is the root of all manifested causes. As by watering the root of a tree, one automatically distributes water to the leaves and branches, so by acting in Krishna consciousness, one can render the highest service to everyone. Self, family, society, country, humanity, etc. If Krishna is satisfied by actions, then everyone will be satisfied. So the Krishna conscious person is not deterred, not distracted by the material energy. It's mentioned here in the purport that he is neither attracted nor averse to sense objects. Now, that's, I think, a very important point, because the actual platform of advancement is that one transcends or is beyond the material conception of life and therefore is neither attracted nor averse. We know that aversion is sometimes the other side of the coin of attraction. And sometimes we see if people are devotees particularly seem overly averse, then you wonder whether there is some attraction there that's fueling such strong aversion to a certain thing. Now, in fairness, sometimes that's a very sincere attempt to try to subdue the attraction of the mind. So if one is very attractive, one might sort of take the opposite, you know, who was it who said, I every time I think of sex life, I spit at the thought. Was it Bhagavan? Who was it? Jamunacharya, yeah. So we're not really on that platform so much, and of course there's a whole context in history when he said that. So when we fall, but if we falsely take up that sort of, you know, response like a great acharya like that, you know, oh, every time I think of something, mental sense gratification, I just almost become, you know, angry, or, in other words, our senses are still being, there's still some propelling from the propulsion from the senses. So the best way to handle this concept of attachment and aversion actually was given in the purport. He says, is that one should have the overwhelming desire to please Krishna by devotional service. So if our meditation and our action is our desire to please Krishna through devotional service, attraction and aversion will eventually drop away. They're still there. They're acting on us in our neophyte stage. But the answer is to simply engage strongly in activities of devotional service of bhakti yoga. It's mentioned in this verse, two words, bahi and antaram. It says that the sense gratification or material desires can both be bahi, external, attracted to the objects of sense gratification, or antaram, internal, which is more or less the memories and the consciousness of past sense gratification. The external maya is fairly obvious to us. Things are mentioned here. Desire for money, desire for sex, or material comfort, or material objects of sense gratification. We all understand what those are, and those attractions. But there's also the subtle attractions of power, fame, prestige, influence, pride, prestige, and adoration is what's often mentioned. So these things are also the subtle allurements of maya, and these are all impediments that we face in the process of Krishna consciousness. But then there is this antaram, the internal, memories of past sense gratification. And those internal desires are sometimes called, or internal impressions are called samskaras. These are the deep mental impressions that are there within us. And those come from two sources. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions in Jiva Dharma that there are two types of these samskaras. One is called praktana, those that come from past lives, and adunika, those from the present life. And he says, these have helped to frame your mental constitution, temperament, and contemplations. And I think this is interesting because when we think about our mental constitution, our temperament, and contemplations, sometimes we confuse this with the self, don't we? We think, the things that I am thinking, my temperament, my personality, my thought, this is me. But actually, Bhagavan Thakur is saying, these are simply the mental impressions from present life and past life times. And so those form what is the current personality, which is really this combination of samskaras from past and present. So they're not the real self, you know, unless those impressions are impressions of devotional service. But usually they're not. And sometimes we have, you know, different desires and things. And sometimes it's hard to understand where things come from, certain mental situations. You wonder, I think it's interesting, like phobias. Like why would somebody be deathly afraid of water or tornadoes or dogs? Maybe they had no experience in this lifetime with those things. It's from past lifetimes. They may have drowned, and therefore they're afraid of in a past lifetime. Therefore, there's just fear of water. We carry all these things with us, is the point. We carry them lifetime after lifetime. And all of this sort of junk is there in the mind from the past. And then, unfortunately, we continue to put more of this into our mind in the current life through our different attractions to material sense objects. So these are the things that we need to work to become free of. All of these mental conditionings, you know, because it's really the mind that has to become purified. When the mind becomes purified, then the body, the senses follow along. And it's very difficult to control the body, the senses, if the mind is not controlled first. So this is the process of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, the process of hearing and chanting, purifies the mind. It purifies the mind of all of our current anarthas and all the past. And actually, even as far as the karmic reactions, these are described in the Nectar of Devotion. They go in a certain process, stage by stage, how past reactions are eliminated and present, current, you know, it goes like that. So there's a very systematic process of how bhakti yoga clears all of these anarthas and samskaras, you know, from the mind and the heart. So the devotee develops a vision to see Krishna's hand in everything. So that's the analogy here. Just as the arrow maker is so fixed in his service, devotee is fixed in seeing Krishna everywhere and always. So that absorption pushes out Maya. He's not bewildered, as it says here, by the false concept there's something that is not Krishna. I was thinking about, what's the literal Sanskrit definition of Maya? That which is not? Does anyone know?
Yeah.
That's close, right? Something close to that. That which is not. All right. So what does it mean, that which is not? I mean, everything is something. You know, if that which is not means it's illusion. We think that the material energy is something that is not. We think this body is something that it's not because we think it's ourself. You know, we think all these things are not the reality. So it's described that there's both internal and external reality that we have to deal with. Seeing everything in the external world as part and parcel of Krishna, part of Krishna's energy, and internally trying to purify the conditioned self, the conditioned nature, you know, to understand that we are servants of Krishna again. So I was thinking one of the best ways to be fixed in purpose, because it's very difficult for us to always see Krishna, have that focus in Krishna at every moment. We wish we could. We'd like to have that absorption, but it's difficult. So one of the ways, of course, that Krishna gives us, he provides many things in this material world. He gives us help. He gives us aid along the way, Krishna knowing this is a difficult process for the conditioned souls. And one of the main things that Krishna does is he sends the guru. The guru is, of course, the living representative of Krishna, one who can help Krishna, who aids Krishna in delivering the conditioned souls from this material world. So I was going to continue that purport of 241, the last paragraph of that. Prabhupada says, service in Krishna consciousness is, however, best practiced under the able guidance of the spiritual master, who is a bona fide representative of Krishna, who knows the nature of the student and who can guide him to act in Krishna consciousness. As such, to be well-versed in Krishna consciousness, one has to act firmly and obey the representative of Krishna, and one should accept the instruction of the bona fide spiritual master as one's mission in life. So that's a heavy statement. Our mission in life. Our mission in life is to serve the spiritual master and accept his instructions, which means, conversely, that one serves the mission of the spiritual master. To serve the instructions of the spiritual master means that one serves his mission. And so that process of purification can be simplified very much, and we think about it as simply following the instructions of the guru. And that will include hearing, chanting, and everything else, because those are Prabhupada's instructions, the nine process of devotional service, and then, of course, various more specific instructions about how to execute Krishna consciousness, how to help spread this movement, how to assist Prabhupada in the execution of Lord Chaitanya's mission of helping to deliver all the conditioned souls in this Kali Yuga. So we have to understand Srila Prabhupada's position and mission. We understand as the founder Acharya of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, he is the preeminent Shiksha Guru and will be for all time as long as we are existing, you know, in this movement through these few thousand years of the golden age of Kali Yuga. And of course, Prabhupada was uniquely qualified to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission around the world. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj sent many devotees to England and a few devotees. They failed, basically. They really couldn't accomplish anything. And at one time, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj mentioned, that is all right, never mind. He says, Abai will do it. He said this. He mentioned, Prabhupada will, maybe you can't do it. That's okay, you tried. Thank you. But Abai, Srila Prabhupada, will do it. And we know that in the Chaitanya Mangala, it's mentioned how Lord Chaitanya's plan was to make the world Krishna conscious. And he would send his field commander to foreign countries to help bring all of those conditioned souls that were not so easy to capture. I mean, we can speculate on who that might be, but we haven't seen anybody else that meets that qualification of a great spiritual personality who went to foreign countries to deliver the message of Lord Chaitanya. At any rate, Srila Prabhupada is our center. He's the unifying force within our ISKCON movement. And our duty is to maintain Srila Prabhupada's movement and establishing the unique role of Srila Prabhupada helping new devotees to understand Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's movement. So the way that we can help unify this movement and strengthen the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is by connecting people with Prabhupada and Prabhupada's devotees and Prabhupada's movement. And it's a very important principle, and I read this before once, and some of you have seen it, but I think it bears reading again. This is a portion of a position paper that GBC wrote about 3 years ago, establishing as a foundational principle to carry on ISKCON the understanding of the relationship with Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's position. So just reading from this, it says, as the founder acharya of International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, and the preeminent teacher and ultimate authority within our society, Srila Prabhupada has a unique relationship with every ISKCON devotee. Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the original guru whose divine grace descends through the medium of the Guru Parampara. As such, a devotee is ultimately delivered by Sri Krishna, acting through a combination of various manifestations of his mercy. These include, but are not limited to, the Chaitya Guru, Srila Prabhupada, the Guru Parampara, one's Diksha Guru, other Shiksha Gurus, the Holy Name Shastra, and the Nine Processes of Devotional Service. Within these cooperative elements, Srila Prabhupada is the founder acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, is the preeminent Shiksha Guru for all members of ISKCON. All members of ISKCON for all generations are encouraged to seek shelter of Srila Prabhupada. All members are entitled and encouraged to have a personal relationship with Srila Prabhupada through his books, teaching service, and ISKCON society. So, we need to connect everyone with Srila Prabhupada. We need to be connected with Srila Prabhupada. We need to help others to become connected to Srila Prabhupada. He is the guiding principle, the core, the center of this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. When Prabhupada established this kind of society, he said, this is his body. So serving Prabhupada doesn't just mean some theoretical thing. Yes, I like Srila Prabhupada, but I don't like the devotees, and I don't like to go to the temple, and I don't like ISKCON, and I don't like the leaders. I don't like anything else, but I'm serving Srila Prabhupada. This is a misunderstanding of serving Srila Prabhupada, because Srila Prabhupada means serving his mission, understanding his intent and desires, which Prabhupada made very clear. And if we're not working for, or if we're actually working against, his organization, this is simply causing pain to the body of Srila Prabhupada. We all know the famous quote that Srila Prabhupada said in one of his very, very last days towards the end of his life. He said, your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate to keep this institution together after I'm gone. Keeping the institution together. Here's an interesting letter, 1973, to Babu Prabhu. Now, something Maharaj. The test of our actual dedication and sincerity to serve the spiritual master will be in a mutual cooperative spirit to push on this movement and not make factions and deviate. It's a very clear instruction. Don't break off. Don't make factions. Go here and there. Here's a letter to Malati in 1974. We have so much work to do, we cannot lose our solidarity. Do not cause a crack that there will be any fighting spirit or competition. Whenever I hear complaints or disturbances in our centers, my mind becomes so much disturbed and I cannot properly translate my books. So please spare me from such disturbance by cooperating all together, God brothers and God sisters. Isn't it? So, Prabhupada's instructions are clear. And there are many like this. You can find 50 quotes like this from Srila Prabhupada's letters, conversations from his books. That we need to work together. We need to cooperate. And when we don't cooperate, it causes pain to Prabhupada. You know, it's kind of like if you're a parent and you have several children, and you know, it's naturally there's going to be some quarreling, there's going to be some disagreement, a little bit of this and that. But if they're constantly fighting, if they were seriously fighting, the fact that they weren't even, like, say, talking to each other, the parents would be very, very pained. This would be very hard. You know, you wouldn't want to see this. You want to see the family together, people happily working together. So we're all part of Srila Prabhupada's family, and we need to all be working together, not forming factions or divisions, and having a single-minded purpose to work together and please Srila Prabhupada. Yeah. So sometimes, you know, people think I can go here, go there, what's the difference? Or sometimes people think I can serve anywhere, and I'm reading Srila Prabhupada's books, and I'm pleasing Srila Prabhupada. I'm serving Srila Prabhupada. And to some degree, that may be true. I don't know the hearts of everybody and what they're doing and what their consciousness is. But from Prabhupada's written and spoken instructions, which we have to take, you know, not like something I concoct or create in my mind, but from Prabhupada's instructions, it's clear that he wanted us to all work within this International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is his society. He created it. He developed the constitution. He developed the seven, you know, mission, the principles of ISKCON. This is all from Srila Prabhupada. So if there's some fault, and of course after Srila Prabhupada leaves, how can any of us possibly carry on in the same way? How can we preserve that same absolute standard Srila Prabhupada? No, we can't. We can't be Srila Prabhupada. But we can at least, to the best of our ability, try to understand Srila Prabhupada, try to understand his instructions, obey those instructions, follow, and try to preserve his institution, just aim to help spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world. Okay. So, forgive me if I deviated a little bit from a strict philosophical presentation, but I think understanding the Guru and his mission is a very, very important part of our philosophy. And more critical it's becoming, you know, that we do stay together as a society. Of course, I'm preaching to the choir here, as they say. All of you who are here, you're here in Prabhupada's ISKCON Temple and, you know, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, but I think these things are very important to keep in mind, and we need to help encourage others, you know, to stay strictly connected with Srila Prabhupada's family. Okay, I'll end at that point. Are there any questions, comments, thoughts? Another speaker? You can take the mic over.
I was thinking of two other examples when they were so fixed. One was Marsh Prickett was meditating, and then some of the Brahma comes and puts the snake on him causes so much seeming difficulty. The other one was, I was thinking of the Dichi Muni, who actually gave his bones for the sacrifice. I was reading that one time before I was going to sleep, and it said in that time that he was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that he didn't know when he left the material body and took the spiritual body. He didn't even realize the transfer. So I was just like amazed to think of that.
Who was that I missed?
The Dichi Muni. That somebody could be that Krishna conscious, they wouldn't know that they left their material body and took their spiritual body. So I just went to sleep with that in my mind, thinking, how could that happen? How could that be possible? So I don't have very many transient dreams. Some people have so many, but I don't. But on this particular night, I dreamt that I was in this big auditorium. It was like filled with people. And Srila Prabhupada was giving a lecture. And I was just listening to every word. It was so ecstatic to be with him, and all these people were completely absorbed in his words. And all of a sudden, I looked around and I thought, where am I? You know? Like, how did I get here? And I woke up and I kind of felt like Krishna was giving me a message that that's how I could become absorbed. Was just being absorbed in Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's mission, you know. So anyway, it was pretty.
Thank you very much for that. That was very nice. We should all have such nice dreams. But that's actually true, and I guess that was what I'm trying to say, that, you know, serving the Guru is the best way to become absorbed, because we don't see Krishna directly so much. Some of you may, but I don't so much. But we can understand the Guru. The Guru is the living manifestation of Krishna's desires. Yeah. Madama Hunter.
I think also Lord Shiva, when Daksha came in, he didn't offer obeisances because he was absorbed. He didn't see him.
Yeah.
And then there's Maharaj Prickett. He was thirsty.
Yes. Sugata mentioned.
Oh, that's the same.
Yeah, then I think the snake. Yeah.
Because I thought she was mentioning the one they made the bones out.
Oh, okay. What else?
When you were mentioning about the samskaras, that internal and external impressions, were you reading that from 241, or was that some?
No, that was actually from Bhaktivedanta Kaur from Jayavadharma.
Oh, okay. Because
Well, the internal and external is mentioned in the purport today. You know, those two things. But when I was talking about the internal samskaras, that was from Bhaktivedanta Kaur.
So what do we do with those?
What do we do with them?
Yeah.
Get rid of them.
They'll go.
Hare Krishna.
There's a way to. They just become less significant. That's.
Yeah, in one sense, it's kind of like they're almost more difficult, you know, because it is internal. It's the purification of consciousness, because we can even externally be controlling the senses, you know, doing things right, following the Krishna consciousness, but we still have those, you know, nagging things back in the mind, and that'll take some time. It'll take some time to become purified.
And I think you mentioned that we identify with them also.
Yeah.
We think that's us, so I guess if we don't think it's us, that's the aspect of self-realization. That isn't us, that's just material. And so we could identify them according to the knowledge you're giving us today, that this is an external, just a samskara, and not the get too much caught up in it.
Yeah, and it's difficult because, you know, and I like the way, it's interesting. Usually with samskaras used being purificatory rituals, right? That's the way Prabhupada usually used it. And I tried to look, I didn't see a Prabhupada ever use the word samskara in this way, talking about those mental impressions. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and others have used that word in that way. And he calls it your mental constitution, temperament, and contemplation. So that's pretty deep. It's fairly deeply ingrained. You know, it's kind of like what we identify as our personality, our external, our personality. That's not really who we are, but it's so strong, we think it is. Who we are is, you know, the jiva who has, you know, his own constitutional position. And we have to almost get through this mental impression, mental concoction, you know, to get to the reality of the self. Fortunately, we have a process that works. Yeah. Okay, anything else? Yes, Dharmaraj.
I was thinking of another example with Arjuna. After their education, they were being all the young princes, they were being tested. So Dronacharya asked them to look at the bird in the tree, to aim their arrow and describe what they saw. So everybody else, they saw the tree, the leaves, the bird. On Arjuna's turn, the only thing he saw was the eye of the bird, what he had to aim to. Mm. So his concentration was so strong that he didn't see anything else, that he was so focused.
The theme of focus and concentration does come up in different stories like that. That's a good one about Arjuna. And we do need to develop that. We do need to develop focus and concentration. I think primarily focus on our chanting. I was doing a program in Tampa a few days ago with our Bhakti Vriksha group, and many nice devotees, and many of them are chanting rounds. And this question came up with a couple of them about the mind wandering while they're chanting and how to do a better job. And I guess, you know, the idea of fixing one's mind, I think that... That's the process we're having through the chanting of the holy name. You know, it fixes the mind. And the more that we can focus on that chanting. I remember when I, one of these japa retreats I went to with Satchinanda Swami many years ago somewhere. And one of the themes that they mentioned is, or somebody was mentioning, was this idea of, you know, like one round at a time, and one mantra at a time. Focus and concentrate just on one mantra. Anyone can do that. just completely absorb yourself in one 16-word Hare Krishna mantra. And then you can probably do another one, since that one went so well. And after you do a few, there's sort of an absorption that develops in concentration that you're able to, you know, at least put a few together, you know, before the mind starts wandering like that. And then, that's my experience, that focus and concentration develops through good japa. Probably other ways too, but that's always one good way. Okay. So, Bandhavadipu.
I was thinking of Sugata's plan on the Adichi Munis or King Parikshit or Arjuna's. There's some common thread I see that, as you mentioned, there's a praktam sanskar, what is coming from previous life, that psychological mechanism that we are carrying. That impression is so strong that we cannot identify beside that. It appears like that's who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And the cultivation of bhakti, it seems like a new imposition. It appears, apparently. But then we see analytically that constitutional position of the soul positioned with this bhakti, so bhakti can override the psychological mechanism.
Right.
Otherwise, not possible. And one lecture I remember Prabhupada said that if our head is focused on the philosophical concept of Krishna consciousness, then it will convince us to put our heart into the chanting.
Hmm.
And then with the head and heart, we can focus on the transcendental subject matter.
Yes.
And then easy it will become.
Yeah. But then ultimately, when the mind needs to be convinced, but then it's the change of heart that comes about through the process of hearing and chanting. Okay, we should end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you. Thank you.